Appreciate that introduction. I am, I think, 546th on the list of American loons. The atheistic community has compiled a list of people that they think are crazy, and I've made 546. So I don't feel like I'm doing as good as I could have. I'd rather be up there in at least the top 25. So I'm working on it. I'm trying to get there. In the late 1880s, there was a man by the name of George Walser. George Walser decided that he thought atheism was the grandest philosophical idea that had ever been presented to humankind. In fact, he was going to prove that. His idea was that if you could just found a town that was based on unbelief and materialism, where people did not believe in God, they did not believe in Jesus, they did not believe in heaven, they did not believe in hell, they did not believe in sin, if they would just focus their efforts on the here and now, building businesses and buildings and spending their time and energy focusing on this life, then he felt like it would be the best society that you could have. And so he started a town based on that principle. And to get in, to be a charter member of this particular town, Liberal, Missouri, you could not believe in God, the Bible, heaven, hell, anything of the sort. You couldn't believe in anything spiritual. And his stated purpose was to show the world that atheism is the best philosophy upon which to build a society. That was his purpose. Now, if you've been to Missouri and you have traveled around the area, you may have seen Liberal, Missouri. I'll tell you what, could we get some of these lights knocked off up here? You got them. That'd be good. This is a sign, population sign from Liberal, Missouri. That's good right there. I visited Liberal several years ago now. I'm going to say it was about 10. Hold on, let's see what else is going to happen to these lights here. Well, flip that one. That's good right there. That's perfect. Well, you can put Ken to sleep over here if you keep that up much longer. All right, so Liberal, here we are. Here's Liberal, population 779. I always think population signs are rather funny insofar as did anybody move into Liberal the day before the sign was put up or after, etc. But Liberal, Missouri, 779. You can see we still got lights going on. What is this? Look, if you'll just get it to the cadence of my voice, that would be good. Like Christmas lights going on. All right, so Liberal, here we are, back, focus. We ready? Here are some of the street signs. Walser Avenue, of course, named after George Walser, the man who founded the town. And then you have Darwin Drive, named for Charles Darwin. He named several of the streets after well-known atheists and unbelievers. Thomas Paine, who wrote The Age of Reason and was an opponent of the Bible and the inspiration of the Bible and Jesus. So you can see that Walser had a very pointed, self-professed purpose in founding Liberal, Missouri, to prove to everybody that unbelief is a great idea. Good to see you guys. Hope you enjoyed the bonfire last night. Did y'all catch any fish? No. Not a fish. Oh, man. I'm glad I didn't go. In fact, I was driving here thinking, I bet they caught all kinds of fish last night. I'm just kidding. I would have enjoyed the bonfire. All right. So, here's what he said. Hey, atheism's better. Was that true? Well, a man by the name of Clark Braden, several months or maybe even a few years after Liberal, Missouri was founded, went to visit Liberal. Clark Braden, if I understand it correctly, was a member of the Lord's Church. He was a traveling preacher and a traveling debater, and he would give lectures and things of that nature, and he wanted to see just how well Liberal, Missouri was doing. And so he went to visit, and he wrote an article for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in 1885. Now, I think this is a neat copy of the actual original article from 1885. My coworker Eric Lyons called, I think, the county seat there in Liberal, Missouri, and got a copy of the 1885 article, and this is it. And you can probably not see the title even from where you are, but the title is An Infidel Experiment. Now, that title is certainly appropriate because Walser had stated, I'm doing an experiment here to prove to everybody that my thesis that atheism is best works. You know, in a sense, this is social science at its finest. This is, I have a thesis, I'm going to put it into practice in experimental form, and we're going to see if it bears out what I think it will. And so Clark Braden writes this St. Louis Post-Dispatch article in 1885, and he explains that liberal Missouri is a cesspool of immorality, that in the town, everybody cusses, all of the women, all of the men, all of the children. The children do not respect or obey their parents at all. The hotels have become brothels, and drunkenness is rampant, and most people would try to get out of Liberal, Missouri, but their property value had sunk so low that they could not even sell their houses, and they were stuck. So much for George Walzer's thesis that atheism is the best philosophy upon which to build a society. Well, of course, the people in Liberal didn't take this sitting down. In fact, one man who owned one of the hotels that Clark Braden had called a brothel sued Clark Braden at the time for $25,000. And of course, in 1885, $25,000 was a considerable amount of money. Now, what was the result of him being sued? The facts were so overwhelmingly accurate and in Clark Braden's favor that he never had to appear in court. The case was thrown out, and the man who sued him had to pay every penny of the court cost for the time and expense that he tried to put into suing Clark Braden. Clark was right. The place was a moral cesspool. The hotels had become brothels. Drunkenness was rampant. And it was a place that people wanted out of, but they couldn't get out of because their property value had sunk so low they were stuck. So what does that show us? Well, if you were honestly to take the idea of unbelief, that there is no God, that there is no heaven, that there is no hell, and you were to put that into practice, what would happen? Now, understand that the psalmist told you exactly what would happen if you put unbelief into practice. In Psalm 14, there's a very famous passage as it relates to dealing with unbelief. You're probably very familiar with it when it says, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God." Now, as we've looked at the evidence this weekend, what we've seen is the idea that there is no God flies in the face of everything we know to be scientific. It flies in the face of everything we know to be legitimate philosophical teaching. It flies in the face of every honest thinking endeavor. The idea that God does not exist is the least plausible, most foolish idea ever presented. Now, it's dressed up in intellectual garb, and it is presented to our kids oftentimes as the thinking man's position, but it's just simply nothing of the sort. It's the most foolish idea that there is. And that's just a fact. Now then, you most of the time don't finish Psalm 14. Most of us stop right there. Psalm 14, 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. But Psalm 14, 1, 2, 3 are going to give you the results of what happens when you put atheism and unbelief into practice. There is none who does good, no, not one. They are corrupt. They have done abominable things. They're evil. Now, lots of times, people want to present atheism as a neutral moral idea. They want to say, hey, you know, there's no morality attached to unbelief. It just is what it is. And you can be, in fact, Dan Barker, Man That I Debated, he's got a CD of songs that he has titled Your Friendly Neighborhood Atheist. Okay, now here's what you need to understand about this idea. Can a person claim to be a Christian and not act like a Christian? Okay, sure, we see that all the time. People will say that they are following Christ, and yet they will sleep with their girlfriends on Saturday. They will do all kinds of drugs. They will cuss. Some of them will steal, break laws, etc. And if you were to say, do you believe in Jesus? Are you acting like a Christian? They'll say, yes, I believe in Jesus, but they're not acting like a Christian. The Crusades, great example of that. A group of people who said, we're fighting for Jesus Christ, and we're going to take over the Holy Lands. Take them back from the Muslims. Now, hold on just a second. Didn't Jesus Christ say, if my kingdom were of this world, my people would fight? But to Pilate, he explained, my kingdom is not of this world. That's why I don't have a troop of soldiers behind me stopping you from crucifying me. I've got a higher level kingdom on a spiritual basis. And if I had a kingdom where we fought stuff, I would defeat everybody. but that's not my kingdom. So when the Crusaders say, we have a physical kingdom that we're fighting for Christ, that's wrong. That's not Christianity in action. They're claiming Christianity, but they're not living Christianity. Now, here's what I'm going to present to you. Atheism is an immoral, grotesquely immoral, philosophical idea. Now, I'm going to prove that to you, I think, for the rest of this course of this lesson. Now, there are people who claim to be atheists and don't put it into practice. And they are highly moral people on a day-to-day, regular basis. I know some people who claim not to be believers. They wouldn't think about stealing anything. They wouldn't think about murdering anyone. They wouldn't think about doing bad things to other people. But they're doing those moral things in spite of their unbelief. And I'm going to suggest to you exactly what I think the Bible is saying right there in Psalm 14:1, that if you put unbelief into practice, if you live out the implications of the belief, then it is extremely, horribly immoral. And I think I'll be able to show that to you. George Walzer, I think, understood that later in his life. In fact, the situation there in Liberal, Missouri is very odd. The cemetery is a round circle, and in the middle there is a place that has been left open. Originally, that place was for George Walzer to be buried. He wanted to be buried in the middle of his unbelieving friends there in Liberal, Missouri. But later in his life, he came in contact with the teachings of Jesus Christ and realized, hold on just a second, I've been wrong. That idea about Liberal, Missouri, and maybe what you'd like to think is that George Walzer said, I am going to follow the evidence where it leads. I'm going to found a town on unbelief. I did that. I thought it would be the best society. It's not. I was wrong. Let me go look for another answer. And he found Jesus. And so in his later life, understanding the teachings of Jesus Christ, he said, I don't want to be buried anywhere close to Liberal, Missouri. And so he was buried about 45 miles away in Lamar, Missouri, where I happened to be doing a seminar. And that's a picture of his tombstone, where you can see that at the end of his life, he was a poet, lawyer, philanthropist, and was buried having lived the rest of his life not in a state of unbelief and atheism. And so what you hope is he followed the evidence where it led, and it led him away from that errant idea that somehow atheism is good for society. So as we start looking at this, we need to understand that beliefs have consequences when they are put into practice. Now, this man, if you were to read his name, Bertrand Russell, Ideas That Have Helped Society, this man wrote also an essay titled, Why I'm Not a Christian. He's not the friend of Christianity. He's not a Christian in any shape, form, or fashion. He doesn't like Christianity. He thinks you are silly and misled for being a Christian. But here's what he does say. Hey, what happens when Christianity gets put into practice in any type of society? He says, well, Christianity, as soon as it conquered the state, put an end to gladiatorial shows. Not because they were cruel, but idolatrous. The result, however, was to diminish the widespread education and cruelty by which the populace of Roman towns were degraded. Christianity also did much to soften the lot of slaves. It established charity on a large scale. It inaugurated hospitals. Although the great majority of Christians failed lamentably in Christian charity, the ideal remained alive and in every age inspired some notable saints. In a new form, it passed over modern liberalism and remains the inspiration of much that is most hopeful in our somber world. Russell, are you a Christian? No. Do you believe Christianity is true? No. What happens when people act like Christians? Oh, well, that's a good question. Well, what happens when people act like Christians and Christianity permeates a society, it softens the lot of slaves, it inaugurates charity on a grand scale, stops the gladiatorial shows, hospitals get built to help sick people that can't pay bills otherwise and don't have medical care otherwise, and it remains the inspiration behind much that is most hopeful in our somber world. Practically speaking, do you want to live where people act like Christians? Oh, that's a great question, isn't it? I mean, what if everybody really did treat other people like they wanted to be treated? Would you want to study in a classroom where people did that? Where the teacher did that for the students? Would you want to be a part of a city where everywhere you went, if you stopped in the Walgreens, the person that was there treated you like he or she would want to be treated? At the bank, you were treated like that person wanted to be treated himself or herself. You treated other people like you wanted to be treated. Wouldn't that be a great society? What if you were to put into practice the teachings of Jesus Christ where he said, love one another? Where he said, be tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as the inspired writer would put later, just as Christ also forgave you. Let not each of you look out for his own things, but let each of you look out for one another. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ. What mind was that? Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but the interest of others. Wouldn't it be great if everybody was looking out for your interest, just like you were looking out for everybody else's interest? What if we stole no more, but labored with our hands so that we had something to give those who had need? What if we let no corrupt communication proceed out of our mouth, but what was good for necessary edification, it might impart grace to the hearers? Wouldn't that be a great place? Sure it would. If you lived in a place where everybody acted like a Christian, Russell says, you know what? Most people who call themselves Christians don't do it right. But when they do, it remains the inspiration behind much that is most hopeful in our somber world. Absolutely, positively it does. Because Christianity is the highest level of living to your fullest that blesses other people the very most. Hands down, no question, everybody recognizes that if you just act like a Christian. Now, like he says, and like the unbelieving community often loves to harp on, can the unbelieving community pick out people who call themselves Christians and they don't act like this? Oh, sure, they can, and they do, and they delight in it. And with gleeful laughing, they say, well, look at this person. He claims he's a Christian. He did this and that. But that doesn't change the fact that the philosophy of Jesus Christ's teachings are the purest, grandest, most elevated moral teachings that have ever been uttered in the history of humankind. Hands down, period. Now, those are the fruits of real Christianity. Now, what are the fruits of atheism? What happens when a person says, hey, I don't believe that there's a God. I don't believe humans are created in God's image. I believe we are animals and that there is no real purpose in this life, that I am a product of multiplied millions of years of chance happenings, and I'm going to live like that. What happens when a person puts that into practice? And we're going to see. A man by the name of William Provine was speaking at the Darwin Day Address. William Provine was a PhD credentialed biologist at Cornell University. He was very famous for his speaking out against belief in God and very famous for his being a proponent of Darwin and atheism and evolution. And he, in his speech on the University of Tennessee's campus in 1998 and subsequently in his writings, this is pretty much his standard line of reasoning, he died of brain cancer not long ago. But he said, naturalistic evolution has clear consequences that Charles Darwin understood perfectly. Number one, no gods worth having exist. Number two, no life after death exists. And number three, that's where we're going to focus right there. No ultimate foundation for ethics exists. Now, here's what you need to understand about a belief. A belief has implications whether you like the implications or not. They are there and you can't deny them. And we'll give you just a quick, very elementary math lesson. The Pythagorean theorem is talking about right triangles. And it says that one side, the side that's A, if you square that and you add that to the side that is B, A squared plus B squared, will give you then the hypotenuse, C, the longest side, squared. Okay, now that's easy to understand. We can see, okay, if you've got A and it is 3, and you have B and it is 4. Now we have two things that are written down, they're clear for us, they're explicit. Explicit means it has been stated forthrightly and it's there in front of you for you to see. The two pieces of information we have that are explicit is A is 3, B is 4. Now, we have not been given C, the hypotenuse, the longest side. Do we know what it is? Well, we know what it is, just as sure as we know what A is and what B is, but it's never been written down. It hasn't been stated. It's implied. Now, if we were to say, hey, I know that A is 3 and B is 4, but I'm going to say C is 8. Well, It's not 8. And it doesn't matter if you want it to be 8. It doesn't matter if you think it should be 8. Even though it's not written down and you don't see a number written on that line yet, you know for a fact it cannot be 8. It's implied. But the implication is just as true and just as real as what's explicitly written for you. So a squared, 3, plus b squared, 4, equals c squared, which is 5. 9 plus 16 equals 25, divide that, etc., 5. So it doesn't matter what you think, the hypotenuse is 5, whether you like it or not, even though it's not written down there. Now here's where we're going with that. If you believe that humans are animals and they are not made in the image of God, that implies that their value is no greater than other animals' value. And so if you treat certain animals this way, then that would mean morally you could treat humans this way. Now you can argue that, no, I would never treat a human this way, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't get away from the implication of the belief. Now, as we're looking at this, here's what Provine says. If there's no God, and you really are the product of random chance processes over multiplied millions of years, no foundation for morals exists. You never really say that a dog steals something. I mean, you could say the dog stole the bone, but you don't throw the dog in prison. You could say that the cow or the bull ruined somebody's fence, but you don't make the bull pay reparations for tearing down somebody's fence to get to another herd of cows. It's not like you think the cow or the bull has done something morally wrong. You just think, okay, it's an animal, that's how animals behave. I'm not going to sue the bull. Now, I might sue the owner for not containing his bull, etc., but I'm not going to sue the bull. Why? Because it's an animal. And so there's no foundation for ethics, for morals, if there's not a God. And here's what we mean by that. Hey, where do you go to decide if something is right or wrong if there's no higher law than humankind? Well, you just basically let everybody make their own choice. And you'll see that I'm not just saying that. That's what Charles Darwin understood, and that's what Provine recognized he understood, and that's the fact of the atheistic implication. Notice what Darwin said. A man who has no assured and ever-present belief in the existence of a personal God or a future existence with retribution of reward can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow those impulses and instincts which are the strongest or which seem to him the best ones. He says, you know, if you don't believe in God, how do you make decisions? Well, if it feels good and that's your strongest impulse, then do that. You know, right now there is a tragic story that I was just looking at on the news as I was eating the continental breakfast there at La Quinta. The young girl who for 88 days was kidnapped. I don't know, do you pronounce her name Jamie Kloss or Close? I don't know. But it's spelled C-L-O-S-S. And here's what happened. This particular young girl, there was a guy who decided that he wanted her. He followed her home a couple days, and he wanted to kidnap her, and so he decided he would. He took a gun, he marched into her house, he shot her mom, he shot her dad, and he kidnapped her, and for 88 days, he had her. Did he do anything wrong? I think we all know that he did. Now, if you were to ask him, did you follow the instincts and impulses that seemed the strongest to you? What's his answer? Yes. In fact, that's exactly what he did. And Charles Darwin says, you know, if you don't believe in God and you can't say you violated God's law, you violated a higher law than a human law, then I guess all you can do is just do the stuff that feels right to you. And if you were to say to this young man, did that feel like the right thing to do? He would then respond, yes. At the time, I did that because that's what I felt like doing. Now, what you then wish you could say is, yeah, but you don't get to do everything you feel like doing, but according to the atheistic philosophy, who says? Who says you don't get to do everything you feel like doing if there's no God? You see, Dostoevsky wrote in The Brothers Karamazov, if there is no God, all things are permissible. And what he meant by that was, morally, you can't say something's right or wrong. You can say you don't like it. You can say, I don't think it'll be good for society. You can say it's going to cost us money if you do it. No, that's not the question. Is it right? Can't answer that if I'm an atheist. Or you can answer it if you're a Christian. You can answer it if you know that there's a God in heaven who sees everything that all humans ever do and ever think. And that God in heaven will bring every thought into judgment one day. And that God in heaven has given us a series of regulations for our own benefit and said, I made humans and I know how humans need to behave and this is how they need to do it. But if you're an atheist, all you can say is, well, listen to Dan Barker, debated Dan Barker. He stated this in 2005 in a debate with Peter Payne on, is it possible to have ethics without God? Now, he failed miserably to contend that it is, but he said, there are no actions in and of themselves that are always absolutely right or wrong. It depends on the context. You can't name an action that's always absolutely right or wrong. I can think of an exception in every case. Okay, now, when I debated him back in 2009, naively, I thought if I could get him to state this again in front of a large worldwide audience. And when I say worldwide, it's not like millions have watched it. I'm going to say in the course of the last 10 years, probably 60,000 times this video has been viewed, this debate. And I thought, you know, if I could get him to say that and then flesh out what he means and show the people the immorality of atheism, then they would just separate themselves from this very immoral belief. And so I brought that up in our debate. We had a question and answer series. And I said, Dan, you said that there were no moral absolutes, that you could think of an exception in every single case. Now, here's what's interesting. In that debate, a student came up to the microphone during the student question and answer period and said, okay, Dan, you've said this. When would it ever be right to rape a person? And Barker said, well, you know, that's so outlandish it might never happen, but I could think of a case if somehow aliens came down and said, we're going to kill everybody in the world. If you didn't do that, then yes, that would be the moral thing to do. Okay? So, in 2009, 4 years later, I have that. I've got the quote from the student, and I said, do you still believe that? And he said, yes, I still believe it. I said, okay, what about two women? He said, yeah, two. I said, what about 2,000? He said, yeah, 2,000. I said, what about 2 million? He said, yes. He said, I feel like it would be my moral obligation to save all of humanity, and I would do that. I would hate myself, he said, but I would do it because it would be my moral obligation. Well, here's what he recognized in the audience that day. There were about 450 members of the church out of the 550-member audience in the venue where we were, and they were all stunned. He could tell that they were just all very taken aback and appalled at that idea. And he looked out at them and then me, and he said, but you would thank me because I'd be saving your life. And I said, no, Dan, we would never thank you for doing something that immoral. He said, yes, you would, because I'd save your life. And I said, well, I've got somewhere better to go after this life. And he said, you don't know that. And I said, yes, I do. Now, here was the irony. Since he doesn't think that he's got anywhere better to go after this life, and since he thinks this life is all that there is, then he is forced to guard his own life and the physical life that he has. And he would do something as immoral as that, 2 million people, to save the physical life of others. Now, you see the problem. Why stop at 2 million? If there are 7.5 billion people, then to save the physical life of the most people, all you got to do is have 50.1%. So you're telling me, Dan, you could do anything you wanted to the 49.9% as long as it kept the 50.1 in the best possible physical position? Well, yeah. You ever heard a line like that? Well, it was interesting because I had a quote from one of the German doctors, and that particular quote said, "We killed all of these people to help humanity." And that's what Dan Barker was saying. No, no, I would do it to help humanity. And you know what? I naively thought, look, if I can get Dan Barker to say that it would be right to do that to 2 million people, surely the people who follow his atheism and unbelief would want to distance themselves from that, would not want to have any part of that. No. No, unfortunately. They recognize very clearly the implication of atheism, most of them. But they say, yeah, but we would never do that, just in theory. That would be the case. Continue with me. What about abortion and atheism? Where do you get the idea, like the New York governor, that you could kill a baby one day before it's born, but the next day, you couldn't? You getting that idea from the idea that all humans are created in the image of God, even those that are unborn, and that the unborn have the exact same rights as those that are born? No, you're not getting that idea from the Bible. In fact, the Bible is going to explain to you that from the point of conception, a child is recognized by God as a human child made in the image of the Creator. In fact, were you to go to the book of Jeremiah, the very first few verses in that first chapter are going to explain to you that God says, "Jeremiah, before you were born, when you were in the womb, I knit you together, I had a plan for you, and I recognized you as a person before you were ever born." The Bible consistently, from the point of conception, recognizes a child as a human being made in the image of God's, made in the image of God, and has all the rights that pertain to that privilege. If you were to look at several verses, like when Jesus was in Mary's womb, and Mary went to visit Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was pregnant with John the Baptizer, and John the Baptizer leapt in Elizabeth's womb because Jesus was there with Mary, and the text talks about Jesus and John the Baptizer being in utero and uses the exact same words that are used to talk about Jesus after he is born in the manger. You see, they're equivalent. A child is a child from the point of conception. There's no moral difference. Now, you go to the idea of atheism. Charles Darwin says, hey, you know, there's really no fundamental difference between man and the higher mammals and their mental faculties. Here's what he's saying. You know, if I'm sitting next to my wife is probably smarter than me. She probably has a higher IQ than I've got. If I am comparing my intelligence to my wife's intelligence, oh, she's probably got me by maybe, I don't know, 5-10 points on IQ. I don't know. Some of you guys, you might be in the same place. Some of you might not. I don't know. I don't know if the person sitting beside you is smarter than you or is like a brain surgeon or anything like that. I don't know. I don't know. But if I was sitting by my wife, she'd probably be smarter than me. But it's just a different degree of smartness, not a different kind. And here's what I mean by that. Okay, she might be smarter than me, but I might be smarter than my son. Probably not, but I might be. Maybe there's someone I could be sitting by that I might be more. Okay, but it's just a different level. Okay, maybe this person's IQ is 115. Well, this person's might be 117. This person might be 119, 128, etc. And so you're just grading IQs. It's just level of intelligence. You just do a test quicker than I would. Now, that's just a degree. But what Charles Darwin is saying is, okay, so you're sitting next to a chimpanzee. Well, yeah, you got a better vocabulary than the chimpanzee, but it's just a difference in degree. It's not a difference in kind. You don't have a different kind of intelligence. You don't have a different, almost level of intelligence. You're not different than the animal. You're just a little smarter. Okay, well, you see the problem with that. Well, if you're, it's not like you have more value as a human being because you're smarter than the person sitting next to you. It's not like you have more rights. Oh, your IQ is 128. This person's IQ is 126. So you have more rights now than the person with the IQ that's 126. You see how that would go? So what, just the smartest people have all the most rights? No. You have all the rights that pertain to humanity because you're human. Doesn't matter how smart you are. But if your IQ is 126 and the chimpanzee's IQ is 86 or 31 or 12 or whatever they would score on an IQ test because they just get lucky randomly poking stuff, it's not like you have more rights than they do, according to this idea. Because if there's no God and there's no difference between the image of God and animals, well, see, you understand that there always has been a difference. When God created all the animals, he put them under humans. And in Genesis 1, 26 and 27, he said, let us make man in our own image, in our own likeness. And so he does, makes them male and female. He creates them in his own image. And then you go to Genesis chapter 9, and God says to Noah and his descendants, all the animals I give to you as food, but anybody who kills a human, they will be required to answer for that because humans are made in God's image. Now, our forefathers understood this very well. In the Declaration of Independence, they stated, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And among those are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, you get the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness not because you're smarter than the person next to you, not because you're prettier, not because you run faster, not because you can cut hair better, not because you're better at writing papers. That's not why you get the rights. You get the rights of humans because you're made in God's image, and that's different from all animals. Now, you take out the Creator. We've been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. You take out the Creator, and where do you get inalienable human rights? You don't get them. In fact, you get humans are no different from animals because we are just evolved a little bit higher up on the chain. And so then the implication is whatever you do to animals, you could do to people. Barbara Burke, she put it very well and more pointedly than most people will, although they believe it. And that's why I keep this 1974 quote up there. But here's what she says. Among some animal species, infant killing appears to be a natural practice. Could it be natural for humans too? A trait inherited from our primate ancestors? Charles Darwin noted in The Descent of Man that infanticide has been probably the most important of all checks on population growth throughout the most of human history. My parents had a dog, a coon dog, years ago. They bought and they thought they were going to, because, I mean, this dog was high powered, had a pedigree as long as your arm, would hunt a coon until it found one. If it had to run 12 miles, it would find one. And the puppies from this particular dog were going to be worth about $1,000 a piece. She had 12, I think, the first time. They thought, oh, this is awesome. She ate every one of them but one. Didn't think she could raise more than one puppy. She had 8 the second time. Ate all of them but one. In her dog mind, she thought, I've only got the resources, the ability to take care of one puppy, and so every litter she ever had, that's all she let live. Population growth stopping. Now, Charles Darwin says, you know what, if a dog, did you put that dog in prison? Did we bring that dog up on charges for child murder or puppy murder as it was? Did you feel like that dog was immoral for doing what it was doing? No, we never thought that that dog needed to go to jail. In fact, after that dog healed up, etc., we just put it back in the woods and hunted more coons with it. You didn't feel like she had done something morally wrong because she killed 7 out of the 8 babies that she had. Now, if that dog's an animal and you're an animal, then what's the problem with killing 1 million babies in the United States of America every year? What's the problem with, since Roe v. Wade, we have killed over 55 million babies in our nation and said that that's the right of the mother? What's the problem with having killed 1/7 of our entire population over the last 40 years? There are about 330 million people in the United States of America. We've killed 55 million in the past 40 years. Now, when the Twin Towers were bombed, it was a tragic act of terrorism, and about 2,500 people were killed that day in a murderous act of violence. And you'll remember George Bush got on television, national, international television, said, we're going to hunt these people out, and we're going to find them, and we're going to start a war on terror, and we are not going to stop until we bring these people to justice. You know, that day, legally across our country, doctors killed 2,500 babies, legally, And the day before that, doctors killed 2,500 babies. And the day before that, they killed 2,500 babies. And the day after 9/11, they killed 2,500 babies. And they've been killing, on average, 2,500 babies a day, which is the equivalent of the most murderous terrorist act ever perpetrated on U.S. soil. And they killed that many every day. And in New York City now, you can kill a baby up until the day it is born. And then somehow we're a Christian nation? You see the problem with that. Now, there's certainly no way you can go to the Bible and get justification for that type of murderous, barbaric activity. And I think as Christians, we need to all stand up and say this is wrong. It is a sin. Our nation has a disgusting black spot on it because of this. And we will not stop talking about it until something gets done. I think we've just lived in a nation where, hey, people kill babies. And we wish they didn't, but they do. And folks, if you were living in a place where randomly policemen came in every day to your city and randomly picked 2,500 people and put a bullet in the back of their head, would you be irate and have a real problem with the morality of your nation? Well, yeah, you would. And in essence, that's exactly what happens every single day. And so where would you get justification for this? You couldn't get it from the Bible. Every one of those babies is image of God, bearer. They have all the rights and privileges that any human has, no matter how smart they are. I was reading a cartoon where a man was looking up to God and said, "Why haven't you sent us a cure for cancer? Why haven't you sent us someone that was smart enough to find the answer to this?" And in the cartoon, God is looking down and he says, "I did, you aborted him." Well, what have we lost in having killed 55 million innocent babies over the last 40, 50 years or so? Well, you can't even estimate it. You can't even understand. There's no way to put a finger on, hey, this is what it's cost us. And the moral depravity you can see there as well. As you think about this idea, I want you to listen to a guy by the name of Peter Singer. Now, here's what I want you to see. I'm not making this stuff up. I'm not saying this is what they say. I'm showing you that they're saying it. Peter Singer is in a video with a guy by the name of Richard Dawkins. Some of you will probably know Richard Dawkins. Probably recognized as the world's leading atheist right now. Has written several books, a bestseller, The God Delusion. And he is a avid, bitter, hard-nosed atheist. But he's in a video with this man named Peter Singer. Peter Singer is an atheistic ethicist. Now, an ethicist is someone who is supposed to study how things work and be able to guide us into thinking what would be the most moral actions in any given situation. He's supposed to be able to tell us what's right and wrong. He's an atheist, and Richard Dawkins, in his video with Peter Singer, who is the most well-known atheistic ethicist in the world, says to Singer, "Peter, I believe that you are the most moral man that I know." Okay, so Peter Singer is held up as the most moral atheist that the world's leading atheist can think of. Okay? You follow my train of thought here. Now, here's what Singer says in several of his writings. He's writing on, lots of times it'll be called Writings on an Ethical Life or something of that nature. And here's what he says. If we compare a severely defective human infant with a non-human animal, say a dog or a pig for example, we'll often find the non-human to have superior capacities. Only the fact that the defective infant is a member of the species Homo sapiens, only the fact that it's human, leads it to be treated differently from the dog or pig. Species membership alone, however, is not morally relevant. He said, all right, you got a dog, pig, and human. In the past, we've favored the human. Why? I mean, what if the human had some type of disability, some type of brain damage or something along those lines? We've still favored the human. There's only one reason we favored the human in the past. And why was it? Because it was a human. He said, but what if the dog or the pig is going to be more beneficial to society? What if the dog's going to be a German Shepherd and it's a very high-bred German Shepherd and it's going to be a great drug dog and it's going to be able to help the canine unit at your local police department? And the human is going to be a drain on resources for the entirety of its life. Which one do you keep alive now? See, we've kept the human alive, he said, because it was human, but species membership alone is not morally relevant. You don't just look at this and say, well, we keep this one automatically because it's human. The other ones, we... Not if you're an atheist. Not if you're a, for lack of a better word, practicing atheist. As you continue, here's what he says. If we can put aside the obsolete and erroneous notion of the sanctity of all human life, we might start to look at life like it really is. You know, he said, we've been laboring under this idea that there was a God and God created humans in his own image, and so we favored human life. But if we can just get rid of that obsolete wrong idea and just look at humans like they're animals, then we can just start comparing which ones are the most beneficial, which animals help society the most. He said, nevertheless, the main point's clear. Killing a disabled infant is not morally equivalent to killing a person. Very often, it's not wrong at all. Now, here's what's interesting about Peter Singer's line of reasoning. He says, we've always, and when I say we, he says, as an atheistic unbelieving community, we've always contended that you could kill a disabled infant before birth, abort it, and that's morally fine. He said, but we then have argued that you couldn't do that after birth. But then he says, but birth is not a morally sufficient dividing line. Why would you say you could kill a baby before birth and not kill a baby after birth? Now, that's what we've always argued as Christians. Where would you get that idea? And then here's what he says. So you think he's going along the right lines? Okay, you think he's going to say, well, you can't kill a baby a month after he's born, so you can't kill him a month before he's born. But no, no, no. What he says later in his writings is, if you could kill a baby a month before it's born, why not a month after? He said, in fact, it would help the parents in consultation with the doctors make a better decision about whether or not this baby is going to be beneficial to society. So as an atheistic community, he says, you've always agreed we could kill it a month before. But then he says, what I'm saying is, why stop at birth? Why not a week, 2 weeks, a month after? Well, if there's no God, all things are permissible. I guess I'm going to end with this one. We're running out of time. I've got lots more information, but you can read this in a book that we've put out called The Christian's Guide to Refuting Modern Atheism. We have this in depth. I have much more of this documented. But I want you to listen to James Rachels. An infant with severe brain damage, even if it survives for many years, it may never learn to speak. Its mental powers may never rise above a primitive level. In fact, its psychological capacities may be markedly inferior to those of a typical rhesus monkey. In that case, moral individualism, atheistic thinking, not talking about humans having any inherent rights from God, would see no reason to prefer its life over the monkey's. Some unfortunate humans, perhaps because they've suffered brain damage, are not rational agents. What are we to say about them? The natural conclusion, according to the doctrine we are considering, would be that their status is that of mere animals. And perhaps we should go on to conclude that they may be best used as non-human animals are used, perhaps as laboratory subjects or as food. Now, you're not going to see that on CNN. And there's a reason for that. The implications of atheism are they are corrupt. They have done abominable things. There is none who does good. No, not one. Now, Satan is going to try to say atheism is a neutral belief. In fact, he's going to say it's a non-belief, that there's nothing really morally connected to the idea of unbelief. But let me tell you this, and let me tell you straight, and I think you know it. If you reject the statement, in the beginning, God created, then you no longer have a foundation upon which to say, this is right and this is wrong. I'm going to choose right. You just have, I'm a random accident in a multiplied billion year process that has no mind behind it whatsoever. I don't have a purpose here, and I can do whatever I want and have no moral consequences to that whatsoever. Now, the problem with that is deep down in every single person's mind, they know some things really are right. And some things really are wrong. And the only way you can ever arrive at the conclusion that this is morally right is if you understand in the beginning God created. You have listened so well. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for being here this morning. This is not one of those feel-good lessons that you walk away from thinking, oh, well, that's a... But it is one of those things that I think we as a people need to understand how devastating and how devious this idea of unbelief is, so we don't think we're just playing around here. We understand the importance of what we're discussing. Glad you were here this morning. Many of you, I see, have been here all weekend, and I thank you for that. It's been a great weekend. I'd like to express my thanks to the eldership for having me and to all of you who have done so much to welcome me and to make this a success, and I thank you for that.